Steve. Thanks very much. It's Bill Leff. Wendy has today off and tomorrow off. Patrick McDonald is our guest. Patrick, of course, a film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. And the guy who runs the best film tours in the Midwest, if not the country.
If not the country.
If not the world. I'm going to say that. You're up and running. People,
yes.
Now, for people who don't know, let's describe this properly.
Yes.
In and around Chicago, there's several places that have become iconic film scenes. Some of your favorite movies have been shot here in Chicago. You take a tour out, and you show them all the highlights,
exactly.
And they get to see fame right in front of them.
You got it. And we have video on the bus, so we actually show you the scene and then show you the location.
That's fantastic.
I mean, it's so cool.
Which of the scenes is the most different? Like, which do people come out and they go, wait, that was here? I didn't know that. Is there anything like that?
Well, there's some obscure places that I've found along the way. There's a couple of warehouses.
Yeah.
Out near Chinatown, okay?
Yeah.
And they, between those two warehouses, it's the old Schoenhofen Brewery, is where the Bluesmobile drove to the orphanage.
Ah.
You want to talk about obscure, but
yeah, that's very obscure.
So obvious once you see the scene, and then you see, right now they're condos, so they have a little fence where the alley used to be. But
why hasn't... In my opinion, Buckingham Fountain is one of the most beautiful, romantic places in the city.
Yeah.
But I can't think of it ever being used in a movie. How is that possible?
I don't know. I don't think they get east of the Bean.
Is that what it is?
No.
There's some line of demarcation by the Bean, and they can't go east of that line.
I'm surprised. Of course, they used it in the opening of Married with Children.
Yeah, right.
Which we have on the tour. We do a little TV
tribute. You do. You do.
So, yeah.
Because I always say to myself, if there's a movie set in San Francisco, I'll lay down a $1,000 bet that they're going to show you the Golden Gate Bridge. It's just a given.
Sure.
It's a San Francisco movie. You're going to see the bridge at some point. But there's places in Chicago that just don't have that kind of notoriety.
I mean, the fountain's an interesting point because it's so visual.
Yeah.
You know?
Colorful.
You filmmakers out there, take notes.
Yep. Maybe a movie about the Buckingham Fountain. Wouldn't that be great? What a great movie that would be.
It might be interesting.
All right, Patrick, a couple things.
Yes.
Number one, I was teasing this earlier, and I'm anxious to hear it from you.
Yes.
For years, we've been hearing there might be a Sopranos movie, and then James Gandolfini died, and everybody went, well, there goes that. Maybe not.
Huge news this week. The title was given for the movie. It's going to be called The Many Saints of Newark. The Many Saints of Newark.
Is it Sopranos semicolon?
It's the origin of the Sopranos, basically.
But the Sopranos will be in the title somewhere, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be the Sopranos, The Many Saints of Newark. But they've named a director, Alan Taylor, from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
But he also did a number of episodes of the Sopranos, so he's very, very familiar with it. David Chase,
the creator,
is writing the script. And it's going to be set in the 1960s during a focus on a series of riots that occurred in Newark, New Jersey, a really bad race riot situation in the 60s. So from there is going to be the impetus, apparently, of Tony's...
So the tricky part, obviously, is finding a young actor who embodies James Gandolfini's style. Any ideas? Do we know anybody?
Well, they did have a few flashbacks in the Sopranos when they went back to his early days, but I think they're going to go for somebody I think they're going to want a star, basically, and who knows?
He was such a different breed that I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that has his style.
My father looks a lot like Tony
So you
Soprano.
Think your dad will play the role?
That's an interesting idea. He just turned 81, so I don't know.
Come on. He can do it. Don't count him out.
No, I won't. I won't.
So then all the other characters that we've come to know and love over the years will be represented in a younger version.
Yeah. We'll see how Paulie got those white sidies.
And tracksuits.
Maybe
they'll show him buying his first tracksuit. That'll be fun.
Big pussy will be little thin pussy.
Yep.
Excuse my...
Is this going to be on HBO or is this going to be in movie theaters?
It's going to be in theaters. It's going to be in...
Oh, I hope it's good.
I'm sure it's...
Hope it's good.
With Chase involved, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
I interviewed him once and, you know, the ending of The Sopranos, all right? So this was after it. And he said after the series aired, he went to Europe. And this was before the days where you could set up your phone and get everything, you know, overseas. So he said, I'm kind of isolated. And, of course, the European press is not reporting on it. So he said, I'm just, you know, I took my 2 or 3 weeks in Europe and I came back. And he said, it was an explosion.
It blew up on him.
No way.
Of course it
did. To make of it, you know?
I'm surprised it didn't get the notoriety in Europe. I know that sometimes shows that are big here a year or two later will become big there, but I'm a little surprised.
I think the connective tissue wasn't there. You know, the Twitter and the Facebook and the thing and the Weizen.
Yeah. Are you one of the people who believes that the show ended on a good note or on a bad note? That last episode, like you said, very controversial in the handling of the last scene. What do you think?
I'm all for something that is memorable.
Yeah.
And then that is as memorable as you can get. I was at home. I thought the TV had gone.
Everybody did.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it faded to black, and everybody went, this is the worst time for my cable to go out ever.
It was a screen, and it was total not silence and everything.
But wasn't it interesting that, I don't know if David Chase wrote that last episode or not, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
He did write it.
He had the ending 2 years before it actually occurred.
All right, so isn't it an interesting spin that he would leave it up to the mind of the viewer as to figure out what happened or what didn't happen? I think that's a really good move.
That's as cinematic as you can get.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, a couple of other things. This now is the mid-year. We're at the 50-yard line on the year.
Yes.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about what have been the best movies of 2018, first half, and the worst movies of 2018.
Yes.
How much of a countdown do you want to do?
I'm going to go top five on the best.
All right.
Quickly, Black Panther.
Are we starting out fifth to first?
Oh, let's go fifth to first. Okay.
All right.
So,
I bet I know what the first one is, though, now.
I'm going to go with, I have a couple of animated films
at
5 and 4. Early Man, the Nick Park, Nick Park did Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run. Early Man, hilarious.
Boy, it came and went so fast.
It did, but it was so good.
It was really good.
Very funny.
Very British.
Yes,
right?
Yes, but also in the tradition of Looney Tunes and things like that. It was all that subtle humor that the Brits are good
at. That's your fifth best of the year.
Yeah, that's my fifth.
So
my fourth is The Isle of Dogs, the Wes Anderson movie, which was just a pastiche of beautiful animation and that dry Wes Anderson thing. You know, it kind of petered out at the end, but I still loved it.
He's one of my favorite filmmakers, and he tries things. He's very, very original. So good for him.
It's great. And
third best?
Third best would be The Death of Stalin. We talked about this on the show. It was a satire about Joseph Stalin's death in 1952 and all the apparatchiks that were around him.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh my God, Steve Buscemi is Nikita Khrushchev.
Always good.
It's unforgettable. Yeah. Jeffrey Tambor's in it as well. We talked a little about his post-reconciliation there, and they did release the movie with him. So, that one was... That one is number three. Number two, Hereditary with Toni Collette. We were talking about that last time I was on the show.
I loved the first half of the movie
and
did not like the second half of the movie.
Interesting. It did get a little surreal.
It got beyond surreal. I wanted so badly for it to scare me, and everything going on in the first half of Hereditary was there. It was as creepy could be. That little girl is the spookiest kid that's ever been in a movie.
Amazing.
Ever.
Amazing.
But then I thought I don't know what happened in the second half. It just became incredibly unbelievable.
They went to the supernatural in the second half,
which
you know, is an easy place to go because you can do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and, but I still was tracking with it because I feel like it was really about our family trees.
Yeah.
The roots that are rotten in our family tree continue to emerge in ourselves.
A good way to look at it, a very positive way to look at it. Although if I close my eyes and that girl's face comes up, I scream like a little girl every time. All right, and the best movie,
finally,
can I guess?
I said it.
Is it Black Panther?
It's Black Panther.
How about that? How come? Why is that the best movie so far of the year?
It just struck me. It struck me, you know, you see a lot of these superhero movies on this beat, and when something comes along that just layers itself with history and colonization, and it was a real mature
It has
film.
A lot to do with the politics of today.
Exactly.
Despite not being about that, it becomes about that.
Exactly.
Doesn't it?
And also, you know, the African experience and the African American experience, the comparisons between the two. And it was the first of the Oakland movies. My gosh, the Oakland movies are just coming
Fast and Furious. But not Fast and Furious. Patrick McDonald is here. We'll tell you what the worst movies of the year are so far, and then get into what's coming out this weekend. Stick around. It's Bill Leff with you on WGN. Patrick McDonald is here, film critic over at HollywoodChicago.com. And the film tour, if people want to take the tour, the best way to reach you is what?
ChicagoFilmTour.com.
Easy. Very easy.
Yep.
We've discussed the best five movies of 2018 so far.
Yes.
Give us a countdown on the worst. What's the fifth worst movie of the year so far?
I only have three, actually, but I'll go number three. Number three is the Death Wish movie with Bruce Willis. I'm giving it, it wasn't like so horrible. I'm just giving it the bad timing award because it came out the weekend of the Parkland shooting. And it was just all about the worship of guns and the shooting 'em ups and the vigilantisms and the
movie was filmed here, correct?
Yes, it was. It was, and utilized some interesting parts of Chicago. It wasn't filmed fully here. You could tell they went off the ranch a couple of times.
Yeah,
but most of it took place in the in that little alleyway near the Chicago Theater. There's a little alleyway, so there was one of the attacks took place there. And it still doesn't, and it's not bad. It's just a horrible timing, and it just may. I would say that anyone who saw it the first weekend had to have a bad feeling in their stomach.
Is this the first time a Charles Bronson movie's been remade? I can't think of any others. No House of Wax.
Great Escape.
No,
that hasn't been remade.
All right, so that's the third worst movie of the year so far. The second worst movie is
what? The second worst is Maze Runner, The Death Cure. The Death Cure, I think the cure would be death for this third sequel of the Maze Runner movie.
Third and final, right? Is this the last one?
Yes, I think everybody's relieved about that.
All right, and worst movie of the year so far, Patrick, is?
A Wrinkle in Time.
I did not see that coming.
Worst episode of Oprah ever.
Ever.
Yeah. Worst episode.
So what happened? Because the cast is great.
Yes.
Well, and the story is interesting.
I think the director, Ava DuVernay, who did a great job with Selma, was biting off more than she could chew with this very special effects laden film. And also, I believe it was a longer movie that was cut down and made incomprehensible because of it. It was boring. The special effects were laughable.
Now, you know Oprah can make it so that you just disappear for saying that, right? You know that.
I love Oprah. I didn't like this movie.
It was Reese Witherspoon, Oprah, and then who else?
Mindy Kaling.
Mindy Kaling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mindy Kaling looked like she was drugged the entire movie, quite frankly. And,
that's not good.
And just in Reese Witherspoon was turned into a flying monster with her signature chin.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Yeah.
Very weird.
Well, good luck to anybody that wants to overtake Wrinkle in Time as the worst movie of 2018. All right, let's talk about what's coming out this week.
Yes, yes, yes.
I guess the biggest release is probably the new Ant-Man movie, the sequel to the first Ant-Man. This is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, Ant-Man has a partner now, the Wasp. Played by Evangeline Lilly, of course, Paul Rudd, the Ant-Man, Michael Douglas, Hank Pym, the inventor of Ant-Man. And Lawrence Fishburne comes in on this one as a kind of semi-rival to Hank Pym. And then Michelle Pfeiffer plays Hank's wife in it.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Good cast. All right, is the movie worth it or not?
Yeah, 3.5 out of 5. It wasn't as good as the first one because the first one had all the surprises. They sort of just amplify on the first one. In fact, the case itself is based on what happened in the first movie. Now, if you haven't seen the first one, you're going to obviously enjoy this one tremendously, and there's no lag time with it. They do make reference to Captain America. America's Civil War, because Ant-Man appears in that one, and he was arrested by the government, so he starts the movie in house arrest.
Oh.
So
it's interesting the way Marvel kind of intertwines a lot of their movie storylines.
Yes, it is. It's almost like the old Saturday morning serials of old. It's like, wait till next year to see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, except Red Bull.
The character of Ant-Man in the last Avengers movie, I can't remember him being in it, was he?
No, he was not. I think at that point he had been arrested.
In jail.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, he was
in
the
Civil War. But if he can become an ant, can't he shrink himself down to ant size and just crawl through the bars?
You would think so. Yeah. They do come up with a kind of clever solution in the movie when he has to go off and do some.
I like how in the first one he seems to not be up to the task of being a superhero.
Right.
That's
right.
Is that the same in the second or not?
He still has that feeling of I don't belong.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what makes his character charming. And Rudd's always good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just everything you expect in a popcorn movie for the 4th of July weekend. So.
I've asked you this before. Mm-hmm. The Marvel movies seem to thrive, and the DC movies tend to just lay there.
Yeah.
Marvel has a way of taking minor characters like Ant-Man or Black Panther, just minor characters,
yeah,
and making good movies, and then DC makes big movies out of their big characters, and they're just not as good. Why?
Well, think about the four that have been released. We have Deadpool, we have Ant-Man, we have Black Panther, and we have the Avengers Infinity War
already. All within 3 months.
Already?
Yeah.
And DC has Aquaman coming up. I'm a DC guy, but I have say they need to get some creative juices flowing there, because, see, they're kind of putting Wonder Woman on their shoulders and saying, oh,
Wonder Woman was really good.
We can do it. Yeah, it was. But I'm just saying, then a year and a half before the next one comes out.
Yeah, it's tough. All right, there's a couple of other releases.
Yes.
We don't have time to get into deep detail.
Quickly.
But Leave No Trace, what is that?
Leave No Trace, Ben Foster from Hell and High Water.
Oh, I like him.
Yeah, he's great as a sort of ex-war vet who lives in the woods with his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he's discovered doing that, and the bureaucracy comes down on them and changes their lives. So,
all right.
Very interesting picture. Same people who did Winter's Bone. And finally, Three Identical Strangers.
Great title.
Yes. About a
very Hitchcockian title.
Set of triplets who meet each other in the 1990s. They had been separated at birth, but the reason they're separated at birth is the key of this movie. It's a documentary.
Oh, it is. Oh, I didn't know that.
Stranger than fiction. And next week, this week, Sorry to Bother You, in a limited release. That is another in the Oakland movies. That's another Oakland movie about a guy who's a telemarketer, played by Lakeith Stanfield, and he talks in his white voice and starts selling a lot of stuff.
Oh. All right.
Yeah.
And when you say Oakland movies, these are movies shot in and around Oakland. That's
Blind
what that means.
Spotting and Black Panther and Sorry to Bother You.
The Oakland movies.
Set in Oakland, California.
That's Patrick McDonald, film critic for HollywoodChicago.com. That's the website. Visit it. You'll like it. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate
it.
A quick break and then some news. And then Mike Toomey joins us in just a little bit from the WGN Morning News. It's Bill Left with you on WGN.